Hi, welcome back to Joe Blogs. In today's episode, I want to give you an update on the banking crisis. Now, you might be thinking, what banking crisis? That was last month's news. We've all moved on. We're now all thinking about something else. But when we're talking about banks and large amounts of capital and balance sheets where you have to balance off your deposits against all of your loans, there isn't a quick fix. And two of the banks that were at the heart of the banking crisis storm, First Republic Bank in the USA and Credit Suisse in Switzerland, have reported that they saw huge cash outflows in quarter one of 2023. And this has put both banks into a very difficult situation. Now, First Republic is still an independent bank. It did get a mini bailout from some of the US banks, but that mini bailout didn't do anything to fix the problems at the bank. All it was a temporary deposit of $30 billion that can be withdrawn at some point in the near future. So First Republic is still teetering on the brink of collapse. And despite the fact that UBS was forced into an emergency takeover of Credit Suisse, that has not fixed the bank's problems. They are still seeing large amounts of capital being withdrawn from the bank. And that means that UBS will now have to bear the brunt of all of those problems. So in today's video, we'll have a look in more detail at the loss of deposits that both banks have encountered in the first quarter of 2023. I'll go into more detail as to what the plans are for both banks to try to rectify this situation. We'll have a specific look at the risk profile of First Republic Bank. And then finally today, I'll wrap up with my summary as to what I think is likely to happen over the course of the next 3 to 6 months, and whether there is a genuine risk that First Republic Bank could actually go bust, and whether there's a possibility that that could trigger another banking crisis. Now, before we get into the detail on all of that, I wanted to raise the issue of not appearing on camera. I've received a lot of comments from people recently saying that they would like to see me back on camera. They'd like to see me in the Joe Blog studio to see the statues and the neon sign. And I know that was popular, but as I mentioned in a recent post, there are a number of reasons why I've changed the format of the videos. Now, if you would like to see me back in my natural environment and presenting on camera, I am running a live stream event on Wednesday, the 3rd of May. And this will be the first ever Joe Blogs live stream event. And it's exclusively for Patreons and YouTube members. So if you're interested in attending that event and either watching it live or a recording later, please have a look in the description below where you'll find links to my Patreon page and YouTube membership.
Customers pulled more than $100 billion of deposits from First Republic in the first quarter, the US-based lender revealed on Monday. The news sent the bank's shares plummeting by as much as 20% in after-hours trading in New York. First Republic says it now plans to slash spending by cutting executive pay, paring back office space, and laying off up to 25% of its employees in the second quarter. First Republic came into intense focus after Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank collapsed last month, shaking the confidence in the US regional banks, with videos showing people lining up outside the First Republic Bank in California to withdraw their funds. Fears the bank was also headed for failure last month prompted a group of major US banks, including JP Morgan and Citigroup, to inject $30 billion into its balance sheet.
So as you've just seen, First Republic experienced a massive cash outflow in the first quarter of 2021. Deposits fell to $104 billion in the first quarter from $176 billion in the fourth quarter of 2022, despite the fact that First Republic got a $30 billion lifeline in combined deposits from US banking heavyweights, including Bank of America, Citigroup, JP Morgan and Wells Fargo. Without the $30 billion of deposits provided by big banks, the decline in deposits would have been almost $102 billion. And this level of outflow surprised the markets, with Timothy Coffey, an analyst at Janney Montgomery Scott, stating that the market had estimated the outflow of deposits to be around $40 billion. He went on to say that losing that much in deposits and having to replace them with borrowings is very expensive. In order to address its problems, San Francisco-based First Republic plans to shrink its balance sheet and slash expenses by cutting executive compensation, paring back office space, and laying off nearly 20 to 25% of employees in the second quarter. The company also aims to increase its insured deposits and cut borrowings from the Federal Reserve Bank. CEO Mike Roffler said in a post-earnings conference call, "We're taking steps to meaningfully reduce our expenses to align our focus on reducing the size of the balance sheet." The briefing he gave lasted less than 15 minutes and ended without executives taking questions from analysts. In response to this, Timothy Coffey stated that the manager's decision to forego a question and answer session with analysts was reminiscent of calls during the 2008 financial crisis. First Republic also said that it was pursuing strategic options to help expedite progress on strengthening the bank without providing any details. However, an undisclosed source told Reuters that the bank was looking for the US government to help by convening parties who could potentially play a role in buoying First Republic's fortunes, including private equity firms and big lenders. The results showed the extent of the damage on First Republic after last month's banking crisis, which fueled concern of a panic spreading through the financial system. It also faces a difficult path to revive its fortunes, banking analysts and industry experts say. For years, it lured high net worth clients with preferential rates on mortgages and loans, making it more vulnerable than regional lenders with less affluent customers. This will discourage potential buyers of the bank because a large mortgage portfolio at incredibly low rates, generating little revenue, is not very attractive, said Robert Conzo, CEO of New York-based investment advisory firm The Wealth Alliance. First Republic's loan book and investment portfolio also became less valuable as interest rates rose. The bank's choices are limited when it comes to selling assets. Divesting the mortgage arm would likely result in losses, while selling the wealth management unit would get rid of one of its most lucrative businesses, said David Smith, an analyst at Autonomous Research. Wealth management is one of the strongest parts of the bank remaining, so I think they'd be cautious about selling that, he added. The bank is looking at ways it can downsize if its attempts to raise new capital fail. Rating agency Moody's downgraded First Republic alongside several other banks on Monday. The lender had its rating reduced by 3 notches, which was more severe than peers including Western Alliance Bancorp, Comerica and US Bancorp. "It's just a really tight picture for First Republic based on its earnings," said Autonomous Research analyst Smith. "Getting the bank in shape will be a lot of work, to put it mildly." This chart plots the risk profile of a variety of US banks. On the left-hand side, we've got the percentage of deposits from retail customers, and higher percentages on this scale are seen as being a positive because it's less likely for millions of retail customers to remove all of their money overnight compared with large corporates who can simply do that with the stroke of a keyboard. And the bottom scale looks at a bank's loans and securities as a percentage of deposits. And for this metric, a lower percentage is seen as being lower risk. So overall, when looking at this chart, the lowest risk banks would be in the top left-hand corner, and the highest risk banks will be in the bottom right-hand corner. And you can see the bank in the bottom right-hand corner here is Silicon Valley Bank. And alongside it, along the bottom axis, is Signature Bank. But if you look above Silicon Valley Bank, you can see that First Republic, which is marked as FRC on this chart, is also classified as being high risk because it has less than 40% of its deposits with retail depositors, and its loans and securities as a percentage of deposits is coming out above 110%.
Credit Suisse saw $68 billion in assets flow out the door over the first quarter, and it says the losses haven't stopped yet. The figures come just weeks after its emergency rescue by UBS, and they underscore the challenge its local rival will have in turning around the business. Clients started pulling money out of Credit Suisse after it was ensnared in the turmoil unleashed by US bank failures. The Swiss lender had already been struggling following years of scandals. On Monday, investors were divided on how to view the figures. Some called the magnitude of the outflows alarming. Now UBS has to figure out what to do with its sudden acquisition. It has said Credit Suisse will continue to trade under its own name, but it's under growing pressure to spin off the bank's domestic business. It's also yet to say how many jobs will go. However, UBS executives have said they expect the takeover to generate about $8 billion in cost savings by 2027. Much of that is expected to come from reductions to headcount.
So as you've just seen, Credit Suisse has announced that $68 billion in assets left the bank in the first quarter. And it's also advised that outflows are continuing, underscoring the challenge faced by UBS in rescuing its rival. Customer deposits declined by 67 billion Swiss francs in the quarter, and the bank noted that many matured time deposits had not been renewed. These outflows have moderated but have not yet reversed as of 24th of April 2023, Credit Suisse said, adding that most of the money leaving the bank was from its wealth management division and occurred across all regions. This net asset outflow followed 110 billion francs being pulled by clients from the bank in the fourth quarter of 2022. The 167-year-old bank has reported results for what is likely to be the last time, as its state-engineered marriage with UBS is expected to be completed soon. Much of Switzerland's reputation as a trusted global financial centre, particularly for the ultra-wealthy, will depend on whether the two globally important systemic banks can be successfully integrated. London-based analyst Thomas Hallett at KBW said in a note to clients, "Credit Suisse's ability to generate revenue appeared to be so damaged that the deal could well remain a drag on UBS's operating results unless a deeper restructuring plan is announced." Assets managed by the flagship wealth management division plunged 29% to 502 billion francs at the end of March from the same period last year. Clients rapidly started pulling money from the scandal-plagued Credit Suisse after it was ensnared in market turmoil unleashed by the collapse of US lenders Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank. In the rescue package rushed together by Swiss authorities, UBS agreed to take over Credit Suisse for 3 billion francs in stock and assume up to 5 billion francs in losses. The deal also includes 200 billion francs in state financial guarantees. Credit Suisse said at the end of the first quarter, it had 108 billion Swiss francs of net borrowings from the central bank after paying back 60 billion. Since then, it has paid back another 10 billion. The bank, however, reported a pre-tax profit of 12.8 billion francs, largely due to the controversial write-down to zero of AT1 bonds and a gain from the sale of a big portion of its securitized products group to Apollo Global Management. When adjusted for these factors, it had a loss of 1.3 billion francs for the quarter. The wealth management and investment banking units will continue to be loss-making in the second quarter, Credit Suisse said, adding that the group is also expected to post a loss for this year. UBS, which has flagged that it expects the deal to bring $8 billion in cost reductions by 2027, is due to report first quarter earnings shortly. Other key facts from Credit Suisse's filing include operating expenses have increased 30% from the previous quarter, which the bank said was largely due to goodwill impairment charge and increases in compensation and benefits. Private clients pulled 6.9 billion francs from the bank's Swiss arm amid questions over the future of the Credit Suisse unit in Switzerland. Credit Suisse planned a 175 million acquisition of Michael Klein's investment banking business, but was called off by mutual agreement. The bank had just over 48,000 full-time employees at the end of the first quarter, a 5% decline from the end of December. So what's the summary and conclusion today? Well, I wanted to post this video to provide you with an update as to what's happening at two of the banks that were at the heart of the problems in the recent banking financial crisis. And as I mentioned at the start of the video, when a bank gets itself into trouble, that isn't something that gets turned around quickly. First Republic Bank is in a very serious situation right now. If you take a step back and think about the fundamentals of banking, the way banking started was that people wanted somewhere to deposit their money and they wanted to earn some interest on that. And in order to be able to pay interest, banks started using that money that had been given to them by customers to lend to other people. Now, the loans that were provided to customers who wanted to borrow were charged at a higher rate than the interest that you're paying on the deposit, and therefore the bank makes a profit in between. That is a very simplified explanation as to how banks work, but it's still fundamentally sound because a bank has to have enough cash to be able to meet all of its liabilities. And the problem that many of the banks encountered in the recent banking crisis was that customers wanted to withdraw their cash. And because some of those banks had invested that cash into long-term bonds at very low interest rates, and interest rates had subsequently increased dramatically, leaving those long-term investments out of the money, banks such as Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank were forced to start selling those bonds at a loss in order to get the cash to give back to their customers. And the combination of those losses and the liquidity crisis caused the banks to fail. Now, when we look at the First Republic situation, First Republic has a large mortgage loan book, and those mortgages were provided at preferential rates to high net worths. So the fact that interest rates have risen so dramatically over the course of the last 12 months means that that mortgage book is now also out of the money. If First Republic was trying to sell that book in the open market, it would go for a very low price. So we've got a situation here where First Republic has used its customer deposits to lend to a variety of other customers, but the rates that it's earning on those mortgages is low. And as First Republic has seen a huge run on its deposits, it's lost over $100 billion in the first quarter of 2023. And as we discussed earlier in the video, that was against the original total deposits of $176 billion. So this is a significant portion of the total deposits that First Republic has. That means that it is sitting on the edge of a liquidity crisis. And if First Republic continues to see customer withdrawals carrying on at this rate, there is no way that it can survive. Cutting its expenses and its staff by 20 or 25% is not going to offset a 50% fall in your deposits when all of your assets are tied up in long-term loans. So even though it may not be headline news in the mainstream media anymore, First Republic is still running the risk of hitting a liquidity crisis and potentially failing. And if First Republic did fail, that could very well trigger another banking crisis. What we saw during the course of the banking crisis last month was that everybody became concerned about the size of their bank, and the smaller banks, the regional banks, are more at risk of failure than the large banks, because at times of crisis, big is beautiful. If you've got large amounts of cash, if you've got tens of millions of dollars, and you're concerned that your bank could run a liquidity crisis, you will move it from that bank to one of the big players. And that's exactly what we saw in the first quarter of 2023. Now, if First Republic did go down, that would cause another wave of that to happen. So we would see more smaller lenders and more smaller banks losing more deposits, and that could very well trigger a second banking crisis. As we saw in 2008 during the global financial crisis, Bear Stearns, the US bank, got itself into a very difficult situation and had to be bailed out by JP Morgan. Now that happened in March 2008. We didn't see the failure of Lehman Brothers and the full banking collapse until later in the year, around September time. So there was a 6-month lag between the first bank going down and then the whole of the market collapsing. So just because we're not talking about the banking crisis anymore doesn't mean that we're out of the woods. We could definitely see more banks getting themselves into difficulty and more banking failures over the course of the next 3 to 6 months if something like First Republic doesn't manage to survive its current problems. Now, of course, the other institution that we've talked about in today's video is Credit Suisse, the banking giant. This is one of the 9 bulge bracket banks that was seen as being too big to fail historically. However, obviously, as we all know now, it wasn't too big to fail, and it almost went into bankruptcy. And the reason that it didn't is that the Swiss government stepped in and forced the merger between UBS and Credit Suisse to happen. But as we've seen from today's video, just because there's been a merger, that hasn't solved the problems. Clients are still taking their money out of Credit Suisse. And of course, that undermines the validity of the bank, because if you have a bank that doesn't have enough deposits but has lots of liabilities, then that balance sheet is highly exposed. So UBS have got a really big job on their hands to try to sort the situation out, and it's likely that it will take years for it to be able to stabilize this situation. The name of Credit Suisse has been tarnished in the international markets, and if you're a client that has hundreds of millions of dollars deposited with the bank, it's likely that you will consider moving it away, and that's exactly what's been happening. As we saw from the details before, when all of the time deposits, all of the fixed deposits are maturing, customers are deciding not to renew. They're not leaving their money with Credit Suisse, they're moving it elsewhere. So although UBS are currently saying that the Credit Suisse brand will continue and will remain a separate name on the high street, at some point in the future, that decision could be changed, and we could see Credit Suisse disappearing and all of those branches becoming UBS, because people have confidence in UBS. They see that as a credible name, whereas the Credit Suisse brand has no credibility whatsoever. So the overall summary of today's video and what I wanted to leave you with is that although nobody's talking about the banking crisis anymore, we've all moved on, there are still a lot of customer deposits that are moving away from these struggling banks, and there is a very real possibility that we could see more financial institutions getting themselves into difficulty during the course of 2023. So hopefully you've enjoyed today's video, you found it useful, informative and thought-provoking. If you've liked what I've said, then please give me a thumbs up. Thank you for watching this video all the way through to the end, and here's something to put a smile on your face.